In this video, we'll take a tour through the new TPL Dataflow library, or system.threading.tasks.dataflow.dll. This library was first released as part of the Microsoft Visual Studio Async CTP, which you can download from msdn.com/vstudio/async. You can see here I have Visual Studio 2010 with a new project, and you can see that in my references I've added a reference to the new System Threading Task Dataflow library. So let's take a look at some of the features that are available here in this library for you to use. When you think about TPL Dataflow, you can think about a solution for in-process message passing, for building actor or agent workloads, and a variety of other terms. But at its core, it's really about buffering data and processing data. And one of the types that best exemplifies this is also one of the simplest types in the library, which is the action block type. So let's create a new action block here, and let's choose an action block of integers. The idea is I give the action block a delegate, which is going to execute for every piece of data that's provided to the action block. In this case, just for example purposes, I'm going to just write out the data that was provided. Then I can, outside of this block, once it's been configured, I can provide some data to it. So here I'll just create a simple loop from 0 to 10, and we'll post to that block. And what this means is we're basically giving the block the data, putting it into its buffer, and once it sees that it has data, it'll internally spin up tasks to process that data as fast as it can, subject to various constraints. And so just for example purposes, I'll do a read line here to block the processing of my application. And let's print out when we're done posting. And then just to make it a little bit easier to see what's going on, I'm going to put a sleep inside my delegate here so that we can see where the delays actually exist. So now when I run this, we'll see that I very quickly was done posting, and now once a second we're spitting out the numbers 0 through 9. Now, a couple interesting things to notice. The first is that the data is being processed in order, which is a key feature of TPL Dataflow. By default, ordering is maintained, which also means that by default, data, while being processed asynchronously, is also processed sequentially. In other words, with a max degree of parallelism of 1. Because if we were able to process things in parallel, we wouldn't be able to guarantee that they were being processed in the right order. In fact, we could pretty much guarantee they were not be processed in the right order because they were being processed concurrently. However, if we would like to give up on some of those ordering guarantees, not all of them, but some of them, we can configure this. So the action block accepts a data flow block options data structure, which you can think of as an options bag for controlling various aspects of how the block works. One of the parameters that it takes is a task scheduler, which if you're familiar with the task parallel library, which was first introduced in .NET 4, is a representation for scheduling infrastructure. Now here I'm just going to use the default scheduler, which is the thread pool, but you could write your own task scheduler, you can pick up third-party task schedulers, and in fact TPL Dataflow includes a custom task scheduler for handling certain kinds of workloads. In any event, the first parameter here will be the task scheduler, but the second parameter will be the max degree of parallelism. So by default, this is 1, but instead I'm going to pass in 4 to allow it to do 4 things at the same time. Now when I run it, rather than processing one piece of data at a time, you can see it was actually able to process 4 pieces of data at the same time. Now, there are a variety of other data flow block options here, but you can explore them at your own leisure. Another interesting thing to note about these kinds of workloads is you often want to kick off a bunch of asynchronous processing or post a lot of asynchronous data and then be notified when all that processing is complete. Well, we can do that by taking advantage of action block's completion task, and this is in fact a property of one of the core interfaces in the TPL Dataflow library called iDataflowBlock, such that all Dataflow blocks have one of these completion tasks. And what this means is the block itself has a lifetime, and we can wait for the block to complete all of its processing or be notified when it's done all of its processing all through this task object that's being returned to represent the asynchronous processing of this block. So for demo purposes, I'm just going to wait on this block, and I'll get rid of the read line now since it's no longer necessary. Now, one interesting thing that I'm missing is this will this wait will wait forever because the action block doesn't know that it's done receiving data. So once I'm done posting, I can tell the block to decline all further data, which allows the block to know that it will never be getting more data, and thus when it's done processing all the data that was previously queued to it, it can then shut itself down. And now if I run this, we'll see again it's done posting immediately, it processes all the data very quickly, and then once it's done processing all the data that was provided to it, we exit. Now, action block is just one example of a data flow block that exists in TPL Dataflow, but there are others. So let me back out some of these changes. And I'll create another block here called the transform block. Transform block, if you're familiar with link, is kind of like select, or if you're familiar with functional programming, it's kind of like a map function. Basically, it takes one input and it produces another input. Now, like action block, it's buffering all of its input data and then processing asynchronously that input data by running this function, again, by default, asynchronously but sequentially with a max degree of parallelism of one. And then it's taking all that output data and it's buffering that as well. So, if I were to loop through here, I is less than 10, I plus plus, tb.post, I, and let's break into the debugger. Now, if we run this application, and we take a look at the transform block, we can see that immediately after posting all the data, its input buffer, sure enough, has buffered all those 10 elements, and it hasn't yet gotten around to processing any of the data, so its output buffer is empty. So let's stop the application, and now let's just add another thread.sleep in here just to give it some time to do some processing, and we'll break in again. Now we'll run the application. Again, we see that its input count is 10. But now after hitting F5 and allowing it to sleep for a moment, we can see that all the processing took place, and now all the data is stored in its output buffer, so it's an output count of 10. And in fact, if we drill into the data here and we look at its output queue, we can see that the data it contains is 0, 2, 4, 6, 8. In effect, the 0 through 9, that got multiplied by 2. Now, these data flow blocks are useful on their own. Not only can I post data, I can also receive data through a variety of means. So I could say transform block.receive, which in this case will block until the first data element is available to be returned. Or I could use the try-receive method, where I can do an if check and say if tb.try-receive out item, process it in some fashion. Or I can receive from it asynchronously. So I could say receive async, which will give me back a task of int, which I can then continue from or wait on or await using the new Visual Studio Async CTP, and so on. But in addition to waiting for data in this fashion, one of the most important aspects of the Dataflow library is that I can actually link blocks together. I can chain them together to form arbitrary Dataflow networks where one block is connected to many different blocks, where many blocks are connected up to the same block, many blocks are connected to many blocks, and so on, and allow data to asynchronously propagate through this network. And I can do that simply by taking a source block, such as transform, meaning it has some data that it wants to be able to offer, and I can link that to a target block, in this case to action block. So now if I loop through and I post data to the transform block, we'll see that when I run this application, the data first gets multiplied by 2 in the transform block, and then it gets propagated to the action block asynchronously again, and asynchronously the action block processes this data as it arrives. I've mentioned asynchronicity several times. This asynchronicity isn't just about spinning up tasks under the covers to run delegates. It's also about taking advantage of I/O and async I/O. So and the ability to utilize asynchronous awaiting. So for example, taking advantage of the new async CTP, I can actually mark this lambda as being an async lambda or an async delegate, which then allows me to use the await functionality provided by C# and Visual Basic within my delegate. So instead of saying thread.sleep, I'll take advantage of the await keyword and a new method on the task class, which in the CTP shows up on the taskX class. I'll choose task.delay. So I'll delay for a second instead of sleeping for a second. And what this await means is that we won't actually be blocking this thread while we're waiting. Instead, we'll be releasing the thread, and under the covers, a timer will call us back to continue the processing. Now, the end result will be exactly the same from a perceived functionality perspective. You can see 0, 2, 4, 6, 8, and so on. But the difference is we're using fewer threads here. While we're actually doing this delay, we're not actually tying up any threads in the action block. And yet the action block is still able to manage the fact that one thing is being processed at a time, still able to schedule to the right task scheduler, and so on. Now, these aren't the only kinds of blocks that exist in the Dataflow library. There are a handful of other blocks, including blocks that are responsible for doing joins and batches and the like. So, for example, I can create a new block here called join block. Now, let's create a join of both integers and strings. The idea is that join block exposes two targets, in this case, a target of integer and an iTarget block of string. And then the join block is itself an iSource block of a tuple of int and string. So if I were to say join block.target1.post, and we'll post 42, and join block.target2.post 43, and then I can receive from the join block. And if I break into the debugger here, we'll see that the item I received is in fact a tuple of integer string receiving that pair of items. Now, there's a lot of, again, control that you can provide over how these blocks operate. You can make join block be greedy, which it is by default, which means it's going to take the data as soon as it's offered to it and buffer it up itself and then only produce tuples when all the data is available. Or it can be configured to be non-greedy, meaning if you connect up sources to these targets using this data flow network functionality, the join block won't actually remove the data from the sources until it has data on all of its targets sufficient to create another tuple. And it does this using a form of a two-phase commit operation. So that's a very quick tour through the kinds of join blocks that the kinds of blocks that exist in the CTP. And just to highlight the breadth of functionality here, if we take a look at the namespace, we can see there are a large number of different types that you can take advantage of. I want to highlight one other type, which exists in the system threading tasks namespace, and this is a new task scheduler called a concurrent exclusive scheduler pair. The idea behind concurrent exclusive scheduler pair is that it's actually a combination of two schedulers. In this case, a concurrent scheduler and an exclusive scheduler. Now, concurrent exclusive scheduler pair is an interesting scheduler. It's almost a meta scheduler. It doesn't actually have any of its own threads. Instead, it runs on top of some other scheduler, by default running on top of taskScheduler.default, but you can control that. What happens is when you schedule tasks to, for example, the exclusive scheduler, this concurrent exclusive scheduler pair makes sure that only one task actually executes at a time. The rest of them remain queued up, ready for processing, until such time as no other tasks are operating. The concurrent scheduler allows any number of tasks to be processed concurrently, subject to another configuration parameter you pass into concurrent exclusive scheduler pair. Here are the max concurrency level, so we could say 4, for example. And now, for whatever I scheduler to concurrent scheduler, only 4 things will be allowed to run at the same time. So that's exclusive scheduler and concurrent scheduler in isolation, but they become really powerful when used together. Concurrent schedule will allow any number of things to be processed as long as there's no exclusive task running. Once an exclusive task gets queued, the concurrent scheduler stops, and once it's done processing all of the current tasks that are running, it doesn't allow any other concurrent tasks to start running. All the exclusive tasks are allowed to run one after the other, and then once there are no more exclusive tasks, the concurrent tasks can again keep processing. In effect, this is an asynchronous reader-writer lock that allows you to control how your data flow networks process data, such that you could have an action block, for example, which accesses some shared state, and it could be configured to live on the exclusive scheduler. So I could say var ab equals new action block. And in here, we could access shared state by writing to it. And because we're writing to it, we don't want anything else, any other data posted to the action block or any other blocks accessing that data at the same time. So we can create a new data flow block options around the exclusive scheduler. And anything else, then, if we had two action blocks, for example, both of these action blocks will be scheduled exclusively with regards to each other. So they will be able to safely access this shared state without worrying about stepping on each other's toes, because the underlying scheduler is ensuring that only one of them is running at the same time. Similarly, we might have another action block. Let's call this action block 3, which only reads shared state. And so we might actually want to allow this guy to be doing 5 things at the same time. But it's only able to read the shared state while the shared state isn't being modified. So if either AB1 or AB2 is doing any work because data was posted to it, AB3 won't be able to do work. But as soon as AB1 and AB2 are done, AB3 will be allowed to continue executing. So that was a very quick tour through some of the functionality available in the TPL Dataflow library. For more information, you can go to the Visual Studio Async CTP at msdn.com/vstudio/async. And there's an introduction to TPL Dataflow document, which walks through all of the Dataflow blocks that are available in this release. We would love your feedback. This is an early CTP, and we're very interested in understanding what functionality you need so that we can ensure the library meets your needs by the time it actually ships. Thank you, and enjoy.